Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today, my guest is Morgan Parker, a poet. She's written a book whose title I've been telling people for weeks now. I think it's such a great title. It's called There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé, and it's published by Tin House. Well, first of all, I guess, are there people who think there aren't?
Yes.
There are.
And they're on the internet, and they're talking to me. And it's, you know, it's been so interesting because when I came up with the title, I didn't think of it as controversial in the slightest. I thought of it as a factual statement. There are many beautiful things. Beyoncé is one of them, but not the only one. And, you know, the people on the internet saying, you know, Morgan Parker is on drugs. Morgan Parker is wrong. I disagree with this. This is blasphemy. It kind of concerns me because I'm thinking, have you seen the sky today? You know, do you have a mother? You know, like, have you seen roses? I think it really is disturbing that folks might think that Beyoncé is more beautiful than, say, love or justice. And really that's kind of the point of the title, not to slander Beyoncé. Why would I do that?
Oh, no. What I wanted to hear was the list of things that are more beautiful, and that's the nature mm-hmm. of the poem. A lot of the poems that get written in the New York School of Poetry, from which that you are a descendant,
mm-hmm.
Are list poems.
Sure.
So there are more beautiful things than Beyoncé would be colon, here they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And those make for very amusing poems
mm-hmm.
because when you place Beyoncé next to your mother, the contrast is inevitably appalling.
Absolutely. And it's not, you know, it isn't this hierarchy, right? It's a celebration of where we can find beauty. You know, it's less about what society holds as a standard of a beautiful woman. It's more, you know, I always say, I'm not going to see Beyoncé today. I will see, you know, a cocktail olive, and that is beautiful because I am experiencing it. So it's more about finding what is beautiful in the world around you, and how sad and lonely must it be to have a version of beauty that exists only on this kind of stratospheric, abstract level of a celebrity that you don't actually know or know anything about.
There's a brilliant photographic collage on the cover by Micheline Thomas, and as it happens, I'm crazy about her art. I've seen her collages in museums. I would go out of my way
mm-hmm.
to see her art. And in a certain way, this cover seems like a commentary on the title.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Micheline read the book and really spent a lot of time with it and really understood what I was trying to get across. And all the covers she came up with were in conversation with the title and with the poems inside the book. I was inspired by her in the writing of a lot of these poems. And it's also, you know, she and I spoke about the making of the cover, and we both decided that a figure should be on the cover. You know, many of her works have figures in them, and the way that she collages with glitter and sequins and many patterns and bright colors and often playing off of kind of European compositions, I think it's about confrontation. It's about confronting that image. And so we both felt that it was important to have to confront a black woman's body on the cover of the book.
When I read the book, people are drawn to the cover.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman whose legs are prominently featured, and her dress is cut very low. It's a tiger print.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like, because her head is thrown way back,
mm-hmm.
Between the gloriousness of the legs and the fact that the face cannot be seen, she looks like she might be Beyonce. Then you start to look, and you see that around her, the whole room is a collage,
mm-hmm.
that there are the inevitable still life bowl of fruit that have been cut from somewhere, and there are pictures, and this is what a black woman is supposed to look like at her most generic when resting at home with no one there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a joke.
Absolutely.
It's saying all black women are privately Beyonce.
Right. And, you know, one thing I love about the posture of the woman and the head thrown back is that it really depends on my mood, that sometimes I'm like, oh, she's laughing. Or other times I think she is just over it and exhausted. And I think both are true. And so that's kind of fun about the cover as well.
So there's a poem in here that is written after the artwork of Micheline Thomas, and I thought it would be best for listeners to hear.
We don't know when we were opened, or the origin of the universe, after Micheline Thomas. A sip of liquor from a creek. Saturday, syndicated good times, bare legs, colors draped like an afterthought, we bright enough to blind you. Dear anyone, dear high heel metronome, white noise, hush us, shh, hush us. We're artisanal crafts, rare gems, bed of leafy bush, you call us superfood. Jeweled lips, we're rich, we're everyone. We have ideas and vaginas, history and clothes and a mother. Portrait ready, American blues, palm trees and back issues of Jet. Pink lotion, gin on ice, zebras, fig lipstick. One day we learned to migrate. One day we studied Mama making her face. Bright new brown, scent of Nana and cinnamon. Shadows of husbands and vineyards. Records curated to our allure. Incense, unconcern. Champagne is how the Xanax goes down. Royal blue raining. We're begging anyone not to forget we're turned on with control. We bet our homes and gardens. We real grown. We garden of soiled panties. We low hum of satisfaction. We is touch, shine, a little taste. You're going to give us the love we need.
It's a wonderful poem.
Thank you.
Now, am I right in hearing a little bit of Gwendolyn Brooks in here?
Absolutely.
We real cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We left school.
Absolutely.
It's kind of amazing. We better homes and gardens. We real grown. So, you know, it's in a way, don't think that because it's black poetry, it has to be about people who left school and think they're
mm-hmm,
real cool.
Mm-hmm.
It can be about better homes and gardens and upwardly mobile aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever becomes cliche must be attacked.
Absolutely.
We live against the platitudes of our time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say is exciting about the book as a whole is that, like the great poetry that started to emerge in the 1960s, that political poetry,
mm-hmm.
it is poetry that's against the dominant culture. And when Beyoncé becomes the dominant culture, the poetry has to move elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I do. I absolutely do. And I think, but I also think that the poems that are against the dominant culture cannot ignore the dominant culture. And I think that that is an impulse that a lot of writers have to kind of live in a bubble of what they deem to be important and to kind of ignore most of the country around them. And I think it was important for me to uphold all the things and give light to all the things, and maybe in doing so to let the reader see that perhaps one is more lasting and authentic than the other, if that makes sense.
I'm talking to Morgan Parker, who's written two books of poetry, the more recent, There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé, published by Tin House. But people, we have to understand it, are afraid of poetry.
Me too.
Why is that?
I grew up hating poetry because I thought it was all about woods and snowy evenings. I grew up in the suburbs of California.
Where'd you grow up?
Outside of San Bernardino. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
stopping by the woods on a snowy evening is not something that you've ever done.
I have never seen a pasture. I'm not sure what it is, you know. And I, for listeners, I am not a white man. So, you know, and I'm also alive and not dead. And I think, you know, I always say that the way that students are taught poetry is completely backwards. I had to barrel all the way into college to be able to read poetry that was reflecting what I was feeling and thinking and the things I was seeing in the world.
You're lucky. I didn't even find it in college. It took me until I was finished with schooling and I could pick up books on my own.
Right.
And see what was there and see if I liked it. And if I didn't understand it, I could pick up another book.
Mm-hmm.
And the day I first understood more than one poem in a row, I felt like, oh, boy, lucky me. Finally, everyone's been telling me how great poetry is all of my life, and I felt guilty and stupid for mm-hmm. not understanding it. But if so, you're guilty and stupid as charged until you're not.
Absolutely.
And one day you find the book that's right for you. You wrote a poem called, what is it, The President Has
Never Said the Word Black.
Yes. Why don't we hear it?
Sure.
I am being very respectful to the folk from NPR.
Oh, no, this is a good one.
Yeah, okay.
I've, like, picked out, there's, like, five poems maybe that are safe for radio.
Here we go.
The president has never said the word black. To the extent that one begins to wonder if he is broken, it is not so difficult to open teeth and brass taxes. The president is all like five on the bleep hand side. The president be like, we lost a young boy today. The pursuit of happiness is guaranteed for all fellow Americans. He is nobody special like us. He says, brothers and sisters. What kind of bodies are movable and feasts? What color are visions? When he opens his mouth, a chameleon is inside, starving.
Wow. Now, that chameleon is starving, I assume, because a chameleon is a color changer. And whatever that president is or was, he wasn't a color changer, but he did not say the word black on television because...
You know, this was a tough poem for me to write because it comes from a place of critique, absolutely, but it also comes from a place of empathy, of understanding why those silences exist. And in many cases, they're a self-protective silence. They're for the protection of all black people and how black people are portrayed in the media. So it was tough to write, and I think the best kind of way to describe the complexity of that was this kind of chameleon, something stuck and hungry for more. So in the end, it is a poem that understands where Mr. Obama was coming from, but, you know, also being a black citizen and feeling that it is important to say that word, you know? So But I'm not president, you know, so it's I can't claim to understand. I mean, I have some idea of the ins and outs of what he was dealing with, being this representative for A, America, and B, Black America. It's an undue amount of pressure.
Now, it is part of the progress of poetry that any poet, a gay poet, a Black poet, a white poet, a popular poet, populist poet, can write a poem addressed to the whole American nation.
Absolutely.
Where is poetry headed? Can it become a populist form?
I would like that. And that is part of wanting to engage with the mainstream world, whether it be in a critical way, in a playful way. You know, I'm not interested in writing fan poems, as it were, but certainly owning the fact that I binge watch reality TV and that I can also read Foucault, you know, both can be true. And I think that what's been exciting about this book has been how many people come up to me and they say they never read poetry. They were drawn in by the cover, by the title, and they read it cover to cover. I kind of hoped that they would at least buy it and then open it and see, oh, there's a very sad woman in here, and close the book. But, you know, it's been really exciting to reach people who didn't expect to be so entertained and moved by poetry. And that is kind of, that's my own personal journey with poetry as well. So that's something that, you know, and I almost missed it if it weren't for encountering a couple of books. I do think that more people want and need and love poetry than know it.
It's an interesting thing because in a way I'm afraid of it, not just poetry. I was reading an interview with you, and you were talking about how most of what people call great art is, in fact, white art.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I happen to have skipped that room at the Met.
Right.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with the poet Morgan Parker about her book, There Are Things More Beautiful Than Beyoncé. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Morgan Parker about her latest book, There Are Things More Beautiful Than Beyoncé, poems that take an unflinching look at what it means to inhabit Black womanhood. Poems that take an unflinching look about what it means to inhabit the world. And, you know, one of the things that I always found about the books I love was that they made it a little easier for me to stay alive. And when I started to read Charles Dickens, who was one of my favorites, it was because I'd read that a girl had laughed herself to death reading the Pickwick Papers. And I thought, what a good way to die.
It's the only way. Only way to go.
I was such a morose adolescent. Of course I wanted to read the Pickwick Papers right away, especially if it would help me in my quest to die laughing. Because life is difficult.
Absolutely.
And sometimes what literature offers us, people hate it when literature is called escapist literature, but literature is an escape. It's the brightest, most beautiful thing the mind can make out of the horrors of what exists.
Out of agony. And, you know, I think about that a lot, about this escapism. And I think usually what people mean is escaping the truth and kind of ignoring it and turning a blind eye. That's not healthy. But it can be escapist to look very closely and look very directly at something that is true. And I think, you know, that's what I enjoy about writing my poems, and that's what I enjoy. That's what I think a lot of readers enjoy, is just the fact that it's honest. And even when it's horribly sad and dark, it's funny because it's true. Like, that's always how it is.
Morgan Parker's first book of poems, Other People's Comfort Keeps Me Up at Night, was chosen by one of my favorite contemporary poets, Eileen Miles, for an award. And I think that one of the bravest things that she does in this book is to close the book not with a celebration, but instead with a poem that immediately warns us. It's called So What? And it's what we are when we don't have poetry,
mm-hmm.
when we just want to get out. And, you know, usually books end on notes of salvation or redemption. This book is a reminder that after you close the cover of this book, in fact, right after this poem, you're going back to the world.
Mm-hmm.
In this book, wildness wins. A dirty imagination wins. A sexual imagination, a stylish imagination wins. When you go back outside, you face the world of defeats,
mm-hmm.
or hard-won triumphs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I wanted you to read this last poem. It made me cry.
Oh, yeah. It definitely was a hard one, I think, to write as well. So the poem takes its title, So What, from the Coltrane song, which I listened to over and over. And if you listen to it, you might understand where a lot of that deep melancholy is coming from. So what? If a pill comes into bed with me, melon-colored dawn is liquid, grandma's lipstick, repentance becoming sky. I am tired of coveting. This is where I hang my hat and kiss myself hello. This is the way it feels to lose. My vision is wind and light. Bottles and men are covered in snow. They touch their lips to a horn. Magical powers are everywhere. Fingernails, post offices, indoor cactus spines. Everyone gets married to everyone. There is song and dance and drink. Vacant lots confess their flowers. I swallow bold colors because so what if I have more regrets than birthdays? I am old for my age. I am made of water. Why do you get up in the morning?
I'm giving the poem the moments of silence it deserves so it can sink in. One of the things I was told when I was given this show to do, and most of us who are at the station, KCRW, were told they wouldn't be able to pay us very much, but we would know why we wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
We would know what our lives were worth it for. And that is, you know,
it's the hardest thing to find, but it is the thing that will keep you waking up in the morning, you know? And I think it was important for me to end kind of posing a question of sorts to the audience and to the self of the book. This kind of, okay, back to you, you know, like, what are you thinking? And the journey of the book, there are some dark poems towards the end, but there are moments of redemption. I think the poem that's preceding that is Funeral for the Black Dog, which is my kind of personal funeral for my own depression. So it is a way of, there are moments of redemption, but even after that moment of redemption, what happens? You know, so that is why I wanted to include that poem at the end. And I think it's, in keeping with the book, it's just, you know, real and authentic. I think it would be so false to kind of have this hero's journey and everything is fantastic. But here's what happens when you turn off the movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for us to think about that.
Well, it's a very interesting thing, because as I went through the two books, I was very pleased and honored that you mention a lot of poets who've been on the show, like June Jordan, over the years. And June was talking about how she was making an anthology of poetry that she could hand out on the streets of San Francisco to people who wouldn't be able to find an anthology in a bookstore mm-hmm. that would speak to their needs. I think that all of us who read or write are very aware that we have needs that the culture, what we're calling for better or worse, Beyoncé culture, mm-hmm. needs that that culture doesn't address.
Mm-hmm.
Beyoncé is great, and when I started to, you know, I'm not all that familiar, but people started giving me videotapes and CDs and streams, and she is beautiful. I mm-hmm. mean, she's astounding. Mm-hmm. She's quite a performer, but it is a performance.
Absolutely.
And we are people who live every day in or outside the rock concert.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're also performing, and that to save our lives, and that also is beautiful. And I think that's one thing that I want readers to kind of know, that, you know, I'm more beautiful than Beyoncé. You're more beautiful than Beyoncé. Our own performance is just as astounding.
I love the way you've put that. And I think this has been perhaps the fastest conversation I've ever had. You've been hearing Morgan Parker. We've been talking about and hearing poems from her book, There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé, published by Tin House, and thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Claudio Magris is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.